ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय So today I was requested to speak on Srimad Bhagavatam. Actually, they wanted me to speak 2 days, today and tomorrow. What I have decided to do is on Vyas Puja, I was intending to come here and speak about Srila Prabhupada, but for some reason I was taken to another temple, and I spoke there on the glories of Srila Prabhupada. So I have many, many nice leelas with Srila Prabhupada, and I'd like to share them today with you. And tomorrow we will do this Bhagavatam class. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Gopal Das. I joined ISKCON in 1968. At that time, there were only 7 ISKCON temples in the United States. So we all understand that all of us here are on the path back to Godhead, and each of us has made a certain level of progress from past births, and wherever we finished at the end of our lives, we start again in the next life at that same spot. For me, I began my quest for spiritual life at the age of 7. When I was 7 years old, I was in bed one evening, and I was thinking to myself, who are those people in the next room? And I was referring to my mother and father, and I thought, what does it mean, mother and father? Every house in the neighborhood, there is a mother, there is a father, there are children, and the routine of all of the people in the neighborhood, in the society, in the country, in the world was relatively the same. The parents raise the children, send them to school, the kids take up some mundane type of education and get a job and work. So I thought there was something more than this in life. And so from the age of 7, I began running away from home. And I would go out into the hills near my house, and aimlessly wander the streets during the day looking for something. I continued doing this until the age of 16, and finally the society and my parents put me in a juvenile prison, a prison for young boys from the age of 16 to 25. And I remained in that prison for 1 year. And the day I got out of prison, my case worker came to my home and he gave me strict guidelines by which I had to follow. Otherwise, I would be put back in prison again. And I patiently listened to him. And as soon as he left, I ran away again. This time, it was 1967, and I went to San Francisco. And in San Francisco, at that time, it was noted as the Summer of Love. This is where thousands and thousands of hippies had come and assembled there to express their freedom and their wanting something better in life. But also, there were a group of strange-clad young boys and girls who had also come to San Francisco. And this was the Hare Krishna devotees. They had left from New York and came to San Francisco. And I was very fortunate to be present at the first Rath Yatra festival in San Francisco. They had a flatbed truck and very large Jagannath deities on the back of the truck, which were had been carved by Shamasundar, a very also early devotee. And sitting in the park, hearing the ching, ching, ching of the kartals, and seeing the deities and these oddly dressed boys and girls following behind the cart, singing the Hare Krishna mantra. For some reason, that mantra stuck in my mind. Little did I know is at that time, Bhakti Rasa Bij, the seed of devotion, was being planted in my heart, and it was going to germinate and grow. Until the stage that it is manifested today. Unfortunately for me, I didn't contact the devotees at that time, but I had incorporated the chanting of Hare Krishna into part of my daily regimen. I was doing yoga, and was very serious about self-realization. Fortunate for me, on a plane, the boy sitting next to me when it was time for lunch I gave him my food because I was vegetarian, and he in return gave me a card which was an invitation to a Sunday feast and bhakti yoga. Someone had given that to him in Seattle, Washington, and he in return passed it on to me. So this was Super Soul reacting to my desire to find a true guru. And as soon as I got that card, I went immediately to the temple. And when I opened the door of the temple, there again I saw Lord Jagannath. So there had been two sets of Jagannath deities made, one large and one small, both by Shyamasundara Prabhu. And also there was a painting of Srila Prabhupada sitting there. So after seeing this, I knew what was coming next. The next phase would be the chanting of Hare Krishna. So I went to the back of the temple, and I stood and I waited for them to chant. And for me, this was the first time to chant with other people, not just by myself, but with other devotees. And it was quite exciting. It was invigorating, and I had never experienced anything so spiritually uplifting at that time. Unfortunately for me is that Seattle Temple at that time was a new temple, and only 1 week before Srila Prabhupada had been there at that temple to open the temple. So I sat down with one of the devotees. They served us prasadam, which was very sumptuous. And I told him that I want to move into the temple. And he said, "When?" And I said, "Right now." So from that very moment, I moved into the temple, and he began to tell me about plans that Srila Prabhupada had to form a world Sankirtan party. This is where he would choose a selected few of his disciples and take them with him and travel to far distant lands to spread Krishna consciousness. And so at that time it was just a vision in my mind about something like that happened. Soon after this, the devotees that were in San Francisco, they decided to go to London. So they went to Montreal, and there in Montreal they met with Srila Prabhupada and got their final blessings and set off to England. And the history of their success is very well known. They met the most famous people in the world at that time and befriended them. Every morning we sing one of their recordings they made there. And when a devotee does something extraordinary, the guru will come to see you. So normally, if your spiritual master is visiting a nearby temple, you will pack your suitcase and your bag and you will go to see him. But if one can do something so extraordinary in the service of Krishna that the Guru comes to see you, this is a great feeling. So these devotees had accomplished this. Srila Prabhupada went to see them, and in turn he visited Germany and a few other places in Europe, and then he returned to the United States. So by this time, 2 years had passed, and in 1970, I got Diksha in Los Angeles. So I was very concerned about what name Srila Prabhupada would give me, because even in 1970 there were very few books, and I didn't want him to give me a difficult name, because I considered myself not very intelligent, and to remember a very complex name would have been very difficult for me. So we were sitting at our yajna fire. The first boy he called up to the Vyasa-san, his name was John, Bhakta John. And he said, your name is Sridhar. And upstairs you have a memorial of Sridhar Swami. Was that Sridhar? And when I heard this name, I thought, oh, this is good. It's an easy name. Sridhar is easy to remember. But the next boy he called up, he said, your name is Romarshan Sutta. And this was a little bit more difficult, and I was perplexed. And Prabhupada called me, and he asked me, what are the four regulated principles? This was very easy. How many rounds are you going to chant every day? This is very easy. And then he gave me these beads. These are the beads that Prabhupada gave me at initiation. And he said, your name is Gopal. G-O-P-A-L. And I said, he said, is that all right? And I said, yes, Prabhupada, thank you very much. So Prabhupada was very intuitive, and he always knew what all of his disciples were thinking. In my discourse, I will show you several examples of how he knew what we were thinking. Soon after initiation, I was sent to West Virginia, where we had a new farm community, New Vrindavan. And it was very austere. There was no shelter. There was only two houses there. One was for Hari Griva, and the other was for Kirtananda. And everyone else had to sleep outside. It was cold, rainy, and muddy, and wasn't a very pleasant place to be. But still, I endured. And there were rumors coming from the West Coast that Srila Prabhupada was going to leave America. He was disgusted with the American disciples and wanted to go back to India. That's because some devotees there were preaching that Srila Prabhupada was God. And of course that is not true. But in order to purify that environment, he made a group of sannyasis. I believe there were five. One was Gargamuni, and then Brahmananda, Vishnu John, Subal, Kartikeya, and Devananda. These were six boys that he made sannyas. He kept two of them with him, Kartikeya and Devananda, who acted as his servant and secretary. And the others, he said, you go out and preach to purify yourselves. So these sannyasis came to New Vrindavan, and immediately they began preaching, Prabhupada is God, Prabhupada is God. But I wouldn't tolerate this. And so I stood up and I told them, you are wrong. Prabhupada said that anyone who says they are God is dog. And so all of the other devotees, they told me, be quiet. They're sannyasis. You can't say that to them. And I said, no. Prabhupada never said that he is God. But the news that he was leaving America brought sadness to my heart, and I thought that I would never see Prabhupada again. But he had a mission to fulfill, so what to do? One of my friends, his name was Rudra. He had been a devotee in Vancouver, just married with a girl named Rukmini. And so we decided to go to Chicago and open the first temple. Basu Goshen joined in Chicago, but it was on Halsted Street. It was just a humble, abandoned building that we had somehow acquired. But not much longer had I been in Chicago than I got a phone call from Los Angeles, and they told me that you have been chosen to go to India with Prabhupada. So Srila Prabhupada had chosen 13 of his disciples to come here to India with him and begin his world Sankirtan party. So I was very amazed and overjoyed at hearing this news. We were told to go to New York, where we met up with the other devotees, collected some money, and flew from New York here to Bombay. We stayed at a gentleman's home, Kalash Seksarian, I believe is the pronunciation of his name, and waited for Prabhupada. Prabhupada left from the West Coast, flew to Tokyo, and in Tokyo he met with a printing company called Dai Nippon Insetsu. Dai means big, Nihon means Japan, And insatsu means printers. And he arranged to have the Krishna book printed. And once that was finalized, he, along with his entourage, which was Kartikeya, Devananda, and Tamal Krishna, they flew to Calcutta. And in Calcutta, two brahmacharis had been staying there prior to the arrival of all the other devotees, and that was Achyutananda and Jayapataka. So immediately he gave both of those brahmacharis sannyas and went to Mayapur and purchased our first piece of land in Mayapur. And it was 8 bikars. A bikar is, I don't know how, one acre? Half an acre, about half an acre. So that was all the land that was allowed to be owned by any one individual. But he bought that land, and Achyutananda stayed and built the Bhajan Kutir that you see even today there in Mayapur. Then he came here to Bombay. And once he arrived in Bombay, our adventure began. He got out of his car, went up to his room, and the first thing that I realized was the magnanimity of his preaching. He would preach non-stop from Mangalarti until 11 o'clock at night, preaching, 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 answering and having questions asked to him. And we were privy to all of this, sitting there listening to the spiritual master, having such intimate association. And soon after this, there were programs arranged for us. And we would go, and there would be a pandal, and hundreds of people would come to see the dancing white elephants. And little did they know that while they were watching us dance and chant, the seed of devotion was being planted in their heart, and the presence of Srila Prabhupada, the Jagat Guru, it fertilized these seeds, and love for Krishna began to grow in the hearts of all of these people in Bombay. And you can see today how successful Srila Prabhupada's endeavors were. There are hundreds and hundreds of Hare Krishna bhaktas in Bombay. So we began traveling from city to city with the same arrangements, where some influential or rich gentleman would invite us to his home, arrange programs for us, and we would do our thing. Our thing was chanting and dancing. And Prabhupada would give lecture. Every once in a while, he would ask one of his students to speak. And in every case, we were the main show. We were there. There were no other people doing things. But on one occasion, we went to a pandal program, and I don't remember the city. And when we arrived, We started to go up onto the stage, but on this stage there was one big Vyasa-san and six little chokis next to it. Sitting on the Vyasa-san was this long-haired, bearded Mayavadi guru. And next to him were five of his disciples, sannyasis, all carrying their ekadanda. And the stage was so crowded that there was no room for all of the devotees to go, just two of us, myself and another devotee, Dinanath Prabhu, and Srila Prabhupada. The other devotees had to sit like you are in front of the stage. And when I went up the stairs and saw this Mayavadi sitting in the Vyasa-san, I pointed at him and told him, "You get up! That's not your seat. That's for Prabhupada." And then Prabhupada, being the gentleman he always was, he went like this, you know, indicating, "That's okay, that's okay." And we walked past the sannyasis, Prabhupada very nobly holding his head high, chanting on his beads, and took the very last seat. And then the Mayavadi sannyasi began his lecture. He was speaking in Hindi, and we didn't understand what he was saying, but every so often there would be Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. And of course, for them that's, "Oh, you're Narayan, I'm Narayan, he's Narayan, everybody is Narayan." And Prabhupada was squeezing his beads tighter and tighter, and had a very grim look on his face. And he looked at me and said, "Chant." So in the middle of this Mayavadi's lecture, I picked up the kartals, began chanting, and Dinanath began to play the mridanga, and the other devotees also had instruments and began chanting and chanting and chanting. And soon, one by one, five by five, soon everybody in the pandal were chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. And once we stood up and started dancing, everybody was dancing. And Srila Prabhupada had his own kartals and was playing them, and he was rocking back and forth. And the Mayavadi guru shut his mouth and just sat there dumbfounded. And eventually he got up from the Vyasa-san and left the stage. And all of his sannyasi disciples followed him. Later, Srila Prabhupada said, "We kick them in their face." So, just by one word, he was able to defeat this Mayavadi sannyasi. And even today, I'm sure that that guru, if he's still alive, has the footprint of Srila Prabhupada embedded in the side of his face. He says, "We do not tolerate Mayavadis." And in this way, Prabhupada showed that his strength of preaching was so powerful that just by one word, he was able to defeat six Mayavadis. We continued our programs traveling from north to West in all different cities of India, even up to as far as Amritsar. We went to that Amritsar city for us Western devotees was a bit of a shock, because as you know, the Sikh, they are from the Kshatriya class, and they are all supposed to carry a sword or a knife, some kind of weapon, knife. But in the city, they were carrying swords all the way down, running, and with their turbans and beards and everything. It was a bit startling. Of course, they were all gentle and kind and hospitable to us. And one gentleman invited us to his house. And in his house, he had his favorite room, which was full of every kind of animal you can imagine that he had personally killed, from elephants to little tiny birds. And they were all taxidermed, stuffed. And you look this way, you see a tiger. You look here, you see an elephant or a bear or some kind of bird or this or a crocodile. All of these animals. And for me, it was quite startling. And Prabhupada was saying, yes, the Kshatriyas would go out, even Arjuna, and practice their hunting skills by killing wild animals. But Prabhupada says, thank you very much, but we will not eat in your house. So we left there and we traveled to the first Kumbh Mela. This was quite exciting because everyone has been to a Kumbh Mela and has experienced so many different types of yogis and religious practitioners there at that Kumbh Mela. And Prabhupada told us, he says, do not make offense to any of these, because some of these yogis, they're 500 years old. They have come down from the Himalayas to participate in this Kumbh Mela festival. So be very careful and don't make any of aparad to any of these people. So we had tents that we stayed in. The tents were reinforced tents. There was two tents, a smaller tent and a larger tent on the outside of it. And my job was to be Srila Prabhupada's guard. And in between the two tents that were his residence was a space about this wide. And that's where I stayed to protect Srila Prabhupada. And one night outside of Prabhupada's tent, there was a dog wandering around. And this dog broke a water pot that was being used by Srila Prabhupada next to his latrine. Latrine means toilet. And I was perplexed as what to do, because there is no water for Prabhupada to wash his hands. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. What to do? So I thought that I would wait until morning, but no sooner did I try to pull the blankets up around my neck to get warm again then Srila Prabhupada went to his latrine. And I thought, what should I do now? And so I had my lota, and I went out, and I stood next to Srila Prabhupada's latrine in the dark, and waited for him to finish and come out of his latrine. When he came out, of course, he was startled, or a little bit surprised to see me standing there. And I explained to him, with my head bowed, Prabhupada, a dog broke your water pot, so you have no water to wash your hands. And then Prabhupada held out his hands, and I poured water over his hands, and then he said, you are a good boy. So that was one of my highlights in my adventures. Two days later, we were all sitting in the main Pandal area, and Prabhupada was reading a letter from Bali Mardan. And he said in the letter that Singapore would be a good place for preaching. So when Prabhupada read that, he looked at all of the devotees sitting there, and he said, so, who will go? And myself, I was looking at the more senior devotees. So at that time, if someone had joined 6 months before you or 8 months before you, they were considered a senior devotee. So I was looking, and no one was volunteering. And I was saying, what's wrong with you? Prabhupada is asking you to go. So finally, I raised my hand and said, Prabhupada, I will go. And then he said, very good. You will leave immediately. So that very day, I was sent by bus, by train, by air to Singapore. One other devotee in the group also said, I will go also. His name was Hanuman. And then one other devotee said, Prabhupada, I want to go to Iran. And then Prabhupada said, yes, very good. And then he said, Brahmananda, you will go to Africa. So at that time, ISKCON truly became an international society. Devotees were being dispersed to many places. The thing to note here also is that when Srila Prabhupada came to America, how much money did he have? $8, yes. But when Srila Prabhupada sent us to these foreign lands, we had no money. Zero. Not even one paisa. All we had was kartals, Bhagavad Gita, and Krishna book. That's what we had. And we didn't even know what language they were speaking in these countries. But we went to Singapore, and the Singaporean government was not favorable. They wouldn't allow us to do Sankirtan. So we shifted into Malaysia. Malaysia is a Muslim country. It's against the law to preach to the Muslims, but amongst the Indians and the Chinese and other diverse ethnic groups, we began preaching. And our preaching method was to do Sankirtan. That's all we knew how to do. We would do Harinam on the streets, chanting. And Krishna is all attractive. People began to invite us to their homes. And one doctor and one lawyer, the wife was a lawyer and the husband was a doctor. They were building a community outside of the city of Kuala Lumpur, and they offered to give us a piece of land in order to build a temple. And so we immediately notified Srila Prabhupada about this, and he became very happy and said, "I will come and join your Sankirtan party." So, as I had said earlier with the devotees in London, when you do something so nice that the guru comes to see you, that is a great accomplishment. So, Srila Prabhupada came and he joined our party. He met this lady, and she had promised to give land under the condition that we build a Balaji temple, because she was from South India and her family deity was Balaji. And Prabhupada said, "That's fine. Yes, Balaji is Krishna. We can have a Balaji temple here." And he said, "But first you build some structure here and we will begin worshiping immediately." And so we continued along a route, traveling from one city to the next, doing our program, with now Srila Prabhupada joining us. And once we reached the last city in Malaysia, we turned and we came back to Kuala Lumpur, and this hut had been finished. And Prabhupada said, "Now one of you must stay here and do worship." And so again I volunteered. I said, "Prabhupada, I'll stay." And so he said, "Very good. You must do 2 arktis a day." And I chose Mangal Arti and Sundar Arti because those are my 2 favorite arktis of the day. And the other devotees disbanded. Prabhupada went to Australia along with Bali Mardan, Hanuman, and our first Chinese devotee. His name is Lalita Krishna. He and Hanuman went to India, and Amoga was a boy from LA. He went to Indonesia to preach, and I was left by myself in that hut, which was quite a long distance from the main part of the city. And again, I had no money, and I would have to hitchhike into the city to get boga, to beg boga from the shop owners, and go back and do my daily puja. This went on for quite a while, and finally this lady, she reneged. Reneged means she took back her promise to give us this land, and said, "I'm not going to give you the land." So Prabhupada, he said, "Now you are free to leave, that hut, but you stay in Malaysia and you preach. So I was perplexed on how to formulate a preaching program by myself, and I remembered what Prabhupada had said, that if you go to a city and you want to make friends with an influential gentleman, you cannot approach him directly, but if you see him in the park and he's with his dog, if you first make friends with his dog, then you will make friends with him. So, of course, I didn't approach these people's dogs, but through their children, I would arrange programs. We would work together and make puppets like Jagai and Madhai and different Krishna Leela puppets. And the children would put on puppet shows, and because the children were doing the shows, the parents would have to come and watch. And so all of the community would come to see their children doing the puppet shows and plays, and they would know all of the prayers and sing and dance. And the Matajis would cook a feast for everybody. And then at the end, I would give a lecture. And in this way, it was quite successful. There was a point where I had to leave Malaysia because the boy in Indonesia wanted to get married. So he left and went to Australia, and I went to Indonesia and took over his seva there. He was teaching at a Indian high school. It was called Hindu Sabha, something like that. And we taught moral science, which basically the parents wanted us to teach them the values of their culture, because they had become so westernized. And I stayed there again with no money, and taught their children for one semester. And at the end of that semester, they, as remuneration, gave me a ticket back to India. So when we arrived, or when I arrived back in India, in Calcutta, Srila Prabhupada was there, and we were going to have a program at the Mallik Temple. So everyone knows the Malliks. Yes, this is the family that lived in front of Srila Prabhupada as a child. And we went there for the first time to have a program. And Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa-san was sitting right here with his back to the deities. And because at that time I was his servant, I was sitting very close to Srila Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. The men were sitting on this side, and the family members of the Malliks and guests and the Matajis were sitting on this side, and they were sitting some distance from Prabhupada's Vyasa-san. Srila Prabhupada was being very cordial, and he was saying hello to a lot of his childhood friends, starting with the most aged, going to the younger members, and they called each other by pet names that they used as children. And when he reached one gentleman who was sitting there, this gentleman spoke in English, not in Bengali. And he said, Swamiji, you have to help me. I'm in such anxiety. I have this daughter, and I cannot find a husband anywhere for her. What can I do? You have to give me your blessings. Please help me, help me. And Prabhupada said, okay, like that. And then this guy continues. He says, you don't understand. I've been looking for so long for a husband for my daughter. And I'm sitting next to Prabhupada. And as we know, the mind is the best friend or the worst enemy. And at this time, my mind was saying and thinking very evil things about this man. When he gestured to his daughter, my mind said, no wonder you can't find a husband. She's ugly. And look at her. She's fat, too. And so you'll never find a husband for her. She'll be living with you until she's 50. And then in this way, my mind was going back and forth. And then this man kept going on, please, Swamiji, help me, do something. And Prabhupada raised his hand and said, stop. You don't have to worry anymore. She will marry this boy. And Prabhupada pointed right at me, and then immediately my mind, oh no, I started thinking, how can you do this to me, Prabhupada? So, what can I do? So, I like to think of this story as killing two birds with one stone. So, this man shut up, and my mind was immediately chastised for thinking evil about this simple woman. The second story in the Mullik temple happened at Rath Yatra festival, and what had happened is we were going to have our first Rath Yatra festival in Calcutta. And I was chosen to cook the prasadam for the festival. And nobody would help because everyone wanted to be at the festival because Srila Prabhupada was also supposed to participate in this festival. But due to threats from the Naxalites, which were communist groups, Prabhupada came to the temple by car. And I was busy cooking, making all of the preparations. Everything was going fine. And I was going to make pushpan rice. And I needed paneer cheese. And I didn't have any paneer. And that was the last ingredient for the rice. And so I didn't know what to do. So I was wearing a gamsha and covered with ashes from cooking with coal and cow dung. I ran into the marketplace, and I didn't know the word paneer. All I knew was cheese. So I was shouting, cheese, 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 and looking here and there. And finally, some mistiwala was just in the process of making paneer. He had put in the fermentation to separate, and it was still in the way. And so I immediately bought it. And I ran back to the kitchen And I tried to squeeze as much of the water out of the paneer as possible. And I wanted to fry it in nice cubes or balls. But at the same time, the Rath cart arrived, Srila Prabhupada arrived, the devotees came in doing kirtan, the deities had been installed on the altar, Prabhupada had been giving his class, and now it was time for prasadam. And still the cheese was not ready, so I just threw it into the rice and mixed it together. And they began to serve the feast. And for me, I was hiding behind a pillar watching the reaction of Srila Prabhupada while he was eating. And he said, "Who cooked this feast?" And one of the devotees said, "I think Gopal cooked it." And he said, "Where is Gopal?" And then I came out from behind the pillar and I looked at Srila Prabhupada, and then he said, "This is very good khichdi." So, in that way, he was complimenting me for my effort. At this same time, there were two projects going on. We called them at that time camps. One was here in Bombay, and the other was in Mayapur. So, most of the devotees were here in Bombay because there was preaching opportunities. And Srila Prabhupada stayed here also because of his opportunities for preaching. In Mayapur, there were no devotees. No one wanted to go to Mayapur because it was in the middle of nowhere, and we had no food. We had to sleep outside. We had no toilets, nothing. So there were four devotees who volunteered to stay there. One was Jayapataka Maharaj. The second was Jananivas. The third was Prabhas. And then there was me. So there were four of us who stayed there, and we grew to love Mayapur with its simplicity and the spiritual potency of the Holy Dham, even though there were very little amenities for us to live with. But just being in Mayapur was enough to satisfy us. One day, three cars pulled into our compound, and we had just finished doing Guru Puja. And they had flashing lights on their cars. So I was thinking, maybe they are some politician coming and spending taxpayers' money to see the Holy Dham. But when they got out with machine guns and uniforms and said, "We have come to arrest the Americans for being spies." And so when they said, "We have come to arrest the Americans," my mind was thinking, "Oh, Jananivas, he's English, so he's safe. And Prabhas, he's Indian, so he's safe. That's only me and Jayapataka." So when they found out there were two Americans, they became perplexed. And they said, "We will take one of you." And Because as a boy, my parents had put me in a prison, and I'd already experienced living in prison. I told them again, take me. And so, also because Jayapataka Maharaj was more important for the project at that time, and I was put in handcuffs and chains, and they put me in a car and took me to Krishnagar, and they were waiting for a prison train to come from Calcutta. And when the train finally arrived, they put me in the prison train and took me to Calcutta and notified the American embassy that they had captured one of their CIA agents. And immediately the U.S. government provided legal assistance because this had become an international case. It wasn't me against the Indian government, it was the American government against the Indian government. And so my court proceedings went on for several weeks, and finally I was found innocent of being a spy, but my visa for India had expired. And so the Indian government wanted some kind of retribution. And so they sentenced me to 6 months in prison. And they took me to this prison and put me in a cell which was about the size of one of these carpets. And my cell had no lights, no bed, no water, no electricity, nothing. Only a bucket and a clay pot of water for passing stool and such as that. And I just had to adjust to that environment. I had my beads, I would chant, and I would use my dhoti to cover myself at night for sleeping, and just made best use of a bad situation. During this time, Srila Prabhupada had been traveling from one temple to the next, and he had been translating the seventh canto. Seventh canto is, of course, Prahlad Maharaj. And when I was released from the prison, Prabhupada had returned to Calcutta, and he immediately called me into his room and he asked me, "Are you okay?" And I said, "Yes, Prabhupada, I'm okay, thank you." And he says, "Do you want to go back to America?" And then I said, "No, Prabhupada, I want to go back to Mayapur." And Prabhupada said, "Very good." And then he began to tell me a story. He said, "There was this little boy, and this boy had a very evil father. And his father began to hate his son because he loved God more than he loved his father." And then, of course, I knew he's talking about Prahlad Maharaj. And then he continued with the story, and then he hit his table very hard with his fist and said, "Krishna's devotees are willing to go to hell to serve him." So in all of Prabhupada's travels, there are two things that were very important to Srila Prabhupada. One is The most important was his translation of books, and the second was the well-being of his devotees. So if you read any of Prabhupada's correspondence, he always says, your ever well-wisher, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami. So if you read the seventh canto, I think it's fifth chapter, sloka 16, something like that, Prabhupada mentions that his disciples are being arrested as CIA agents. So he didn't use my name personally, but even while he was translating his books, he was concerned about my well-being. And for that also I am very grateful. So I'm going over time, so I'm sorry for that. If anyone has a question. Yes.
Gopal Prabhu, we thank you very much for your sacrifice because of the older devotees' sacrifice, we are existing. I just wanted to ask you one thing, your Japan adventure, if you could give in little synopsis, and how you ended up becoming a professor of English in Japan.
In Japan?
Yeah.
Well, this, on more than one occasion, Trivikram Swami asked me to relieve him of his service. So, at that time, he was president in Tokyo. And he had been a long-time friend. And he asked me, will you come to Tokyo and take over so I can go preach somewhere else? So I agreed. I went to Tokyo, and it was very difficult because nobody spoke any English. And the population was humongous in Tokyo. So I saw great opportunity for making good money for Prabhupada's mission. And so 1974, when they had the first Gaur Purnima festival in Mayapur, I met with two of my old friends also, Guru Kripur and Yasodhanandan Swamis, and I convinced them to come to Japan because they had their Namhatta party. And at that time, the Vrindavan temple was just being started. So what we did was, we had our Food for Life program, which I started in Mayapur, and we went out with buckets of khichdi and were feeding all of the people, making sure that we got our pictures on the camera. And then when we went back to Japan, we made a little pamphlet showing us, not just some random people, but showing us personally feeding the hungry people in Mayapur, and used that as a bait to get donations from the devotees or the people in Japan. And they gave willingly, and they were very gentile and docile, and because of that, almost all the money from Vrindavan Temple was collected in Japan.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji, thank you. Prabhuji, I just wanted to know what were you thinking when you were present? Means what was
I thinking?
Like many thoughts maybe come or don't come, I don't know. Means if I were put in any situation, my mind think something. So what were you thinking when you were present? Or
I was thinking always, how can I please Srila Prabhupada?
That is what would give you the most strength at that time.
Yes. When you're sent to some faraway place, the thing that kept me strong was my... you know, Prabhupada had given us a sadhana that we must follow, and this knowing that I have to do this was enough to keep me motivated.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna Prabhuji. So very nice to hear. I wanted to ask two things. What is unfulfilled desire? One.
What is my?
Unfulfilled, or now also a dream which you passion to live now. One, in the jail you said you wanted to please Srila Prabhupada.
Well, recently I've gone through several serious health issues. I just got out of the hospital. I was paralyzed from the waist down. Now I'm just able to walk, but if Krishna finds it in his heart to allow me, I'm thinking I might go to Cambodia.
May I ask you, where is your better half?
I have no better half.
But you did marry.
No, never married.
You said when Prabhupada said he had married.
Yes, that was fortunately something that never happened.
Okay. Thank you.
Yes. Okay, thank you all for participating. And I just want you to know that all of Prabhupada's disciples are becoming like me. We're getting older and our healths are not so strong. And so this responsibility to continue to spread Krishna consciousness, it now becomes your duty. It was so rewarding to be a pioneer in spreading Krishna consciousness to every town and village around the world, but there's still so much of this world that is unleft and unconquered, which you can do. And don't have the attitude that everything must be provided for me. There must be a temple. There must be prasadam three times a day. There must be this. There must be that. No. You must be in the mentality of nangyai nangyai jana. Right? You're born with empty hands and you die with empty hands. And you go to preach and you have only one dependent, and that's Krishna. And if you depend on Krishna, He will provide you with all facilities for preaching. So if you want to make your Guru Maharaj happy, if you want to make Srila Prabhupada happy, Bhaktivinoda Thakur happy, and Lord Chaitanya happy, you must take this responsibility seriously. And not be afraid to take on the world and challenge. Okay, Hare Krishna, thank you.